Hello and welcome to the Selfish Podcast. Today we have Chandrika Fee, who I'm excited to connect with and share with and get to know. So first, can you just tell me, where in the world are you? What time of day is it?
Oh gosh, where in the world am I? That's a very interesting question. I see words in picture. And when you say that, you know, in the concept of the world, I'm in a very small space. You know, it's comparison to how far away you and I are. I'm in a small city called Columbus, Georgia. That is Georgia in the States. And I moved here probably over 18 years ago. And so, I moved here. My life changed and that's where I am. And it's so cool to talk to you way in Spain while you sit and look at the mountains and water.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I think we briefly caught before the podcast started. Like, it's just a beautiful time to connect with people. I used to dream of the idea of a pen pal when I was a child. It was like, oh, maybe you could send a letter to someone and they might in a month back, send a letter back. Yeah, I never done it, but I was excited by the idea. And now I can just, like, I'm talking to you live, you know, so it's incredible.
It is. It is 9:35 a.m. in Columbus, Georgia.
Okay, it's just nearly 4 p.m. for me. So it's like mid-afternoon. It's a nice time. And not too hot yet, so I'm okay. It gets hot here soon. It's going to get real hot. Yeah, what I like to do with my guests is to get to know them more personally and to just see where their life has been and their experiences. I like to go back to the childhood. So can you paint me a picture of what life was like, say, pre-10 years old, what you did, how you felt, and what was going on in your world?
I was born to Christian parents, definitely have a Christian heritage. My parents were very, very much so active in Christian church. And so when I was born, I was, you know, born into that, if you will, legacy. And, you know, from the ages of birth till 10 years old, as far as I know and remember, I always did church and school. Maybe played outside some, but for the most part, my life and the life of my sisters, of who I have three, I'm the oldest of four girls. Our lives were church and school. And so, I don't remember much about myself, as a self, you know, as a person who, had any kind of awareness of self. I just remember what I did. I remember doing what I was told to do. and that's pretty much it, you know, school, church, do what you're told. That was my childhood from birth. Well, at least from awareness, some kind of awareness to 10 years old.
How do you remember school being? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, that's a great question. I have no awareness of enjoying school. I mostly remember being picked on. Hmm. So I went to school in mostly a Black neighborhood. And so, you know, there was a lot of jealousy. And I had, you know, my sisters and I, we had long, beautiful red hair. We are very fair-skinned women. And so that was something that stood out apparently to other students. And so we were picked on a lot about that.
Oh, okay. So is it you come from mixed race or you're just fair skin?
Just fair skin. I think there is a mixed race in our family line.
Yeah.
But both my parents are, they identify as Black.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I come from mixed ethnicity. I'm half Indian and half English. And when I was in school, I was the only one that was mixed. That didn't happen back then. It wasn't a thing that really that anyone really knew about people. There wasn't other children that were mixed, you know.
Yes.
But there was lots of Asians in my school, lots of English people in the school. Not so many Africans. That was a lot less. But I was like the odd one, but I wasn't picked too much on it. It was more actually they fought over competition of which side I was on. you know, because it was a really odd place to be. It was like the Indians wanted me on their side because I had Indian in me. The whites wanted me on their side because I had English in me. So it's worked out for me, but it made me actually really aware. So I was always watching and like I think coming from sort of mixed background, I didn't have some sort of belonging to a race. So I didn't identify with any race. So I didn't have that judgment or issue with it, but I was really aware of theirs. It made me really tuned into their issues with it, which I found fascinating. Mm-hmm. And even more fascinating now that I look back. But it's really interesting that you got it from the form of people pretty much of the same race, but just it was a skin tone bias, not even race, but it didn't matter where you was from. It was the complexion.
Right. It was our complexion that made us stand out. It was our hair color. It was our skin color. It was freckles. It was our eye color. I was picked on a lot. I had several fights. More so, I was fighting for my sisters. If it wasn't, you know, girls who were jealous, it was boys who liked us but didn't know how to express it. And so they were dangerously, you know, bullying. And so I had to fight boys over my sisters, fight girls over my sisters. Eventually, I fought for myself, but I was more used to caring for and fighting for my sisters. I'm the oldest. So I'm always, you know, fighting for what's right, fighting for what's fair as it relates to them.
Yeah. And I think that's like, I've got a younger sister and I know what it's like to be a bit protective, but I've been on the other receiving end. My brother's 3 to 4 years older than me. Mm-hmm. So when I was in school, he was in the eldest sort of class. He was just about to say finish school when I just started the same school as him. And he had a good reputation as being really tough. So everyone, even the older kids, knew who he was. So they were like, oh, you can't touch him. He's such and such brother. And I remember that when I was walking around school, because it's like the first time you even feeling that feeling, because we'd never been in the same school together. And it was such an odd feeling, but it felt good. But it also felt nice to know that your brother's got your back, even if he's not there. So I imagine your sisters really appreciated that knowing you were there and got their back.
You know, it's not something we discuss. I hope so, but I don't even know if they remember. You know, I remember.
They remember. I remember. And I don't think I really discussed it with my brother so much that I can even be aware of, you know. Maybe I will next time, thanks to you. So thank you.
Yeah, that would be great. I don't even know if they remember. I remember having to jack up a boy. I waited for him to come out of the front door of the school over my youngest sister. He was his oldest sister, or he was one of two siblings, or maybe three. But his older sister used to pick on me. And I remember one day getting off the bus. And I got tired of it. And there was a broken stop sign on the corner where someone had hit it and just left it broken. And I picked it up after she got off the bus and I popped her with it. And then I walked home, you know. And so, you know, years later, her brother tried to, you know, start the same thing with my sister, and I was not having it.
Yeah, I love the irony that it says stop on it as well.
Right. I never thought about that. Stop. She laid on the ground. You know, what was so funny is her parents, they called my parents and we ended up at their home. And my parents said, your daughter has been picking on my child for years and we've never called y'all. We've never sat down with y'all. And my daughter finally, you know, does something about what your child has been doing to her for years. And now you want to talk to us, you know. Yeah. So that was always just an interesting dynamic. Yeah. She stopped after that for sure.
Yeah, the sign worked. She got the message.
The sign worked.
Yeah, like you said,
she got the message. Her brother didn't. But no. I'll call him later.
Yeah, it's that sibling protectiveness, no matter what they've done, isn't it? Like, whoever they are, you got to come in. And same with the parents.
That's right.
Systems. Like, if your child says, like, they were the one being picked on, the parents instantly in that protective mode. And no matter what you said or done, they're just not going to believe you because you believe your own blood quickly.
Right.
So what got you through when you was going through them sort of real tough times? What did you find at that time any strength in anything? Did anything help?
So the thing for me is that I didn't come into any self-awareness until I was in my 30s. And I'm just 47. So that was only about, you know, 15 years ago. Yeah. And so I don't have a lot of memory of self. I remember, you know, perhaps wanting to do what people said I couldn't do. I, being a church kid, particularly in the Black church, which is a separate entity of Christianity and church itself. I remember wanting to play the drums and being told that I couldn't because I'm a girl, and the pastor's, the drummer was the pastor's son.
Okay.
And maybe it was, I remember wanting to do that, but not really knowing that I wanted to do what I couldn't do.
Yeah.
I just remember wanting to do it. It was probably my mother who facilitated, you're not going to tell my daughter what she cannot do. Hmm. So my parents got me a set of drums for the house. And I learned how, I taught myself how to play. And I became a church drummer who in turn taught others how to play. So there was, I guess, this part of me that always lived, that always wanted to do what others deemed I couldn't do. Always wanted, was always doing something different, always doing something unpopular, you know, which is manifested in my life today as I have written a book, you know, saying that I don't want to be a part of the greatest or the largest religion in the world, Christianity. On the front of the book, I wrote, "Lord, I don't want to die a Christian." You know, so however many years later, after teaching myself how to do what a man said that I couldn't do, years later, I'm still announcing, you know, that there's something different I want to do and be. I want to do something and be something that is not popular.
Yeah, nice. I'm really curious now with that. What, that's what your book's about. So I really want to get into that. But first, can you just tell me what happened at, say, around 30 that you feel gave you a sense of self?
I had an opportunity to go and live in China. I was hired to teach over there and do missions work. And it got me away from the people who and the environment that was keeping me from myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So for me, Christianity was keeping me from myself.
Okay.
If that, you know, that makes sense. So everything I've been taught, or everything Christianity has taught me, kept me from learning and knowing who I am authentically.
Yeah. So you felt like that was keeping you in some form of like box, cage. When you broke through that, travel into all the different identities, the others, different cultures, different landscapes, just the whole thing was just like a breaking out that cage, out that box.
Right. I had a chance to go live in China, and, you know, I'm there, and I can't do Christianity. You know, I had to figure out how to be what I believed. And so I didn't know who I was without being able to do Christianity. Who was I? And so I really had to kind of push into that. Who was I without the crucifix? Who was I without the clothing that identified me as Christian? Who was I without being able to carry my Bible everywhere I went? Who was I without the things that identified me as Christian? And I had to figure out who that was, because doing Christianity in China would have gotten me in trouble.
Oh, interesting. What was you in China for? You said you was teaching. How long, sorry, was you there?
2 years.
Also a fair amount of time.
Yeah. And sometimes I used to feel like that I wasn't there long enough.
Have you been back since?
I hadn't.
No. So at what point did you decide you'd put this into a book? Because I'm guessing that was a big turning point for you, and you felt like you had that message to share with others. So when did that sort of start to manifest?
I came back from China And when I came back, we were on the back end of Barack Obama taking his seat as the president. And, you know, there were our white Christian brothers and sisters of great influence. They were in the pulpit expressing their disdain for having a Black president. They were expressing their racist views, all under the guise of Christianity. In the meantime, I was struggling with coming back to the States and going back to Christian culture and church culture. I was going and felt claustrophobic. My perspective of God, people, and life had expanded, and it couldn't fit in the same way of thinking that I had left in the States. Now I'm back and I have changed, and I'm trying to fit who I am and who I've become, as much as I'm aware of, in the same way of thinking that I left. And it was a struggle. So between those two realities, I was frustrated. Racist Christians expressing their ill for having a Black president, and then me trying to adjust back to Christian religious expression in Western culture. I was struggling. And I remember watching a pastor invite his grandson to the pulpit to sing a racist song about a Black president. And I turned the television off. I got up to start cleaning my apartment. I walked over to my front door to pick up some shoes. And when I stood, I exhaled, "Lord, I don't want to die a Christian." And I took one step forward and said, that's a book. I took another step forward and said, I wasn't planning on writing a book. And so I really kind of pressed into the idea of writing a book and what I would write around that sentiment. And I pursued that. I started writing. I actually felt like I had been reminded as I prayed about what to write. I believe the Lord reminded me that I had already started writing it. As while I was in China, I was evolving in what the way I was thinking, and my experience was causing me to evolve. And I had been writing about that as I communicated back here to my friends back home. And so I was revisiting those journal entries, if you will, and seeing how much I had changed, and reading those entries, those journal writings, and going, I don't even believe that anymore, you know, and revisiting those subjects and rewriting now what I believe. So in my book, you know, for instance, in the first half of it, you'll have an entry from live in China, you know, live in that moment, in that experience where I'm articulating how I've been impacted by what I've done. But then to, you know, revisit that years later and go, I don't even believe this anymore. So that is what I call a PS, you know, it's my postscript of now what I believe about that particular subject.
Oh, nice. And yeah. So how long, when did you start your book, and how long did it take you to write?
That's a great question. I have no idea when I started it.
Well, you sort of started in China with the journals, but
right. So it was that long ago, but intentionally tackling it to make it a book, I don't remember. And it took me up until last year to finish. Even after I signed a publishing deal, I continued to write, and I would submit more journals, because now it's present day. Now I'm rethinking a lot of what Christianity has taught me altogether. And I'm journaling what I'm rethinking, what I think about it now, or the questions I have about it now. And so it goes often from a date and time where I wrote something years ago, and now I have a postscript, to now just a page of what I'm thinking present day today, what my resolves are, or what my questions are.
Oh, nice. And yeah, I'm interested to get into the publishing side of it. But first, I want to just like get to where you are now, say, with your faith. Like you say, if you don't identify, I'm guessing from the title, as a Christian, mm-hmm. are you still in that process? Or where's faith for you right now in your life? Because you spoke about you still pray.
Yeah, I do. I do. I still pray. I still believe in God. I still believe in the notion or the idea of a God. And I believe in the notion of having a relationship, either with the idea or with or with the reality. I believe belief is very strong. And so if I have an idea with the if I believe in the idea, that's going to produce an experience. If I believe in God as a reality, that's going to produce an experience. And so, I still believe in God. I still believe in meditating or prayer. I still press into that. I want to, at some point, I need to write this down, but I kind of want to take the word faith back. You know, faith has been given to or accosted by religion. And so, people ask, well, where is your faith now? Or what about your faith? Or are you changing your faith? No, faith is just simply to believe. So I still believe in a lot of things, not just God, but faith, as you know, or belief, as you know, applies to a lot of things. My faith is strong. I think everybody's faith or ability to believe is strong. It's what we put it, what we make that, where we invest that belief. Yeah. My belief or my investment is no longer in religion.
That's really interesting. And then when you're saying bringing faith back, that's been like, I have a YouTube channel as well, where it's just me talking and sharing my perspective experience, a bit like your journaling, just like, I will just have a conversation about part of my life or a topic or a random question someone asks me and give my current thought and perspective on that. And I was through a podcast with someone else who was talking about religion and faith. And I was describing to the guy, I said, I'm a faithist. I said, I'm fully in faith, man of faith. I said, but I have no religion. I said, I attach to no religion. I said, but I am full of faith. And then I done a video on what I called faith fitness.
Have to talk more. Yeah. I love it.
I don't know if that's a term I invented or not, but I called it faith fitness. And I said, it's like how I measure how quick can I get myself back to whatever's happening in my external is happening for me, not to me, no matter how bad it seems. This is happening for me. It's an opportunity here. Even if it comes later in my life, that I can reflect on it and imagine that opportunity. I can choose that event for me and having mm-hmm. that faith that you're in that system as fast as possible. And a bit like your fitness, how quickly you can do something, how quick you can get back to, once you've done an exercise and your heart rate gets back to a certain rhythm of relaxation. To me, that's mm-hmm. like how quick something's really stressful happens and you might get thrown out of life a little bit. How quickly can you get back and just smile and go, this was meant to happen. This is my mm-hmm. life and it's flowing. I'm just a part of it. And this is something bigger is happening and I'm just riding. I'm in the journey mm-hmm. and having faith mm-hmm. in that. And I see a lot of people that say, they really don't want to belong to a religion. They've seen too much of the stuff that's been shown that say puts them off, you know, because there's loads of beautiful things that come from religion, but loads of terrible things as well have been used in the name of religion. So there's, mm-hmm. and that's advertised like crazy. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, they just instantly just switch to, I don't know what the official terms are, but like atheist, I think agnostic, I think might be the other term. Like they don't, mm-hmm. and they lose the faith in the process in life itself. Mm-hmm. Because they become unknowing of everything and questioning and just sort of in discomfort, you know, they have no faith fitness left. They're really unhealthy in faith. So mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that was a big part of what I've been thinking about recently and started putting some bits out. It's trying to like reunite people with that. And that includes all people of all religions, you know, they're allowed in, they've got faith, they've got their own views, points, but as long as they have a faith in life, you know, and bringing that back, not wanting to do harm, wanting to give love, compassion, kindness.
Right.
Being on that path. So no, it's really beautiful to hear your story and how that transformation's happened for you. And that you're still in that mode and you haven't gone, say, like, because when you first said the book, I was like, oh, she lost her faith completely. Like that was the first sort of thing that pops in your mind, which is good. Gains a lot of interest into the book, you know, straight away. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like you said, and then it can actually give something.
Well, you know, remember the first word in the title is Lord. So it's me offering that as a prayer. It was literally an exhale out of my spirit. This thing that has your name on it, I don't want it, you know? And so how do I enjoy believing in the idea or the notion of a God that is bigger, greater than me, that I can thrive from and imitate, if you will? How do I believe in that without the trappings or what I call the fig leaves of Christianity or religion? How do I do that? And asking that question has been more impactful to my thriving than being a Christian altogether. And yes, I'm still in the process. I think that as long as I'm living, because I've spent more time in Christianity than I have in without it. I have a degree in biblical studies. I'm ordained. I'm ordained in the Christian religion. I'm going to stop saying Christian faith, as my book says.
Yeah.
But again, I'm on this journey. So I'm still finding words to articulate the experience and what I've chosen to give my energy to. But yeah, I still believe, but how do I, you know, how do I live life with my faith in God without the box, the prison of religion?
Yeah.
And as much as good came out of it, I talk about the good that came out of it. If it were not for Christianity, I wouldn't have my relationship with God. But Christianity's offering of God is limiting. So I feel like there's more to God than Christianity has to offer.
Yes.
And I'm looking to experience that.
Yeah. And I'm interested with the obstacles you faced coming from such a faith background community. So your parents are, your sisters, I imagine, are. How did you integrate this transformation with them, and what obstacles did you face?
Well, you know, if you see them as obstacles, for me, they definitely have been opportunities, more so than that there have been obstacles, you know, opportunities to grow. One showed up the other day. I realized that there are people, I'm choosing my words very wisely. There are people I love who have disconnected from me on social media. And in the same breath, I offer, I love you. You know, it's like, it's an opportunity to grow more than there is an obstacle. All of it has been an opportunity to grow. I can't really offer to you an obstacle publishing this book. There have been relationships that I've had to let go. Or they've organically just kind of dropped. So there's been this opportunity to connect with authenticity as a reality in our world. You know, there are authentic people, and being and connecting with them in relationship has been great.
Yeah, no, I love that answer. I love that you said, no, they're just opportunities, not obstacles. Because that's how I try to always, like, that's that faith fitness. You're just trying to get yourself back to, like, someone else could be going in the same experience and say, look at all these obstacles.
Right.
But if they're not attuned to looking at the opportunity there, you don't, like you said, you don't grow. You shrink.
No.
Because you're just going to sit there and go into a worse state of being. And like you said, if there's that larger picture, that larger higher power, God, whatever someone wants to call it, it's going to offer opportunities. Mm-hmm. It's a bit like, it's a bit like, I always see it as well, like a film, and it's like a film without drama, you know, you wouldn't watch it. There has to be some drama for a good story. Yeah.
Yes.
And life's not over, the story's still going. So hopefully there's still some drama, you know, it's just not going to be any fun, is it?
Right.
Yeah, but it's like you say, but if you got during them dramas, you're looking for opportunity, there's always opportunity for massive growth.
Always. Often, you know, the growth is a revealing of oneself. So the growth often is said differently. It's a revealing of how you were created to be. Yeah. And then stepping into that revealing, it's like, oh, that's me. I want to be more of that. You know what I mean? And so often the opportunity is it reveals who you are. Hopefully, you know, the good of who you are. And you step into that and manifest that, you know, as a person. And so, Saturday was, I had my first book signing, and it was so full of joy and it was so cold, but, I was stationed, my table was stationed across from a church, who was also offering their entrepreneurial, product. And there was this opportunity, you know, to have a conversation with them. I wasn't going to stand on the literally opposing side. They were on one side and I am on the other. And by opposing, I mean opposite. And so I wasn't going to stand on the opposite side while they passed out cookies about Easter. And I'm on the opposite side, say, I don't want to die a Christian, and not speak to them. I went over and had a conversation with them, and I continued to engage them for the rest of the time we were all there. It was so full of joy to see the disgruntled faces, to see the saddened faces about the title of my book. And it was so full of joy to see the people stand in front of my table and say, thank you, God, for this book. There's somebody else who thinks like I think. And so every opportunity was just so full.
Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of people that have so much, like they're feeling how you felt, but there's so much fear of loss, you know, fear of losing their loved ones, fear of losing their community, whatever they've been in this, say, I don't want to be offensive and call it a club, but they've been in a group, you know, that's been their family, their friends for a long time. And there's some people there that, like you said, they're not sure if they want to be in that club anymore. And you're showing that through your book, your journey, I think offers people a lot of something to contemplate, but something to actually give them possibility.
Right. That's the thing, the possibility. Like, I didn't know that was a choice. What you mean? Check this out. The first person to buy my book on this past Saturday was a pastor. Yeah. Nice. You know what I mean? What do you mean? You can do that? You can make that choice? Yeah. You can make that choice.
They think if you leave it, that you're leaving God.
And right.
You're showing, no, it's not. I'm leaving a brand in such a way. But
that's right.
But if anything, I'm becoming more connected to God.
That's it. I am the connection to God that I have is becoming more and more tangible for me. It's becoming more and more real, becoming more and more of a possibility than I was ever experiencing while practicing Christianity.
Yeah. I'll tell you a little bit of my, like, when religion sort of entered and exited my life. when I was young, I had a really sort of traumatic upbringing. My mom was a single mother and she suffered severe mental illness. She's developing severe schizophrenia during my early childhood. So by the time I was 7, she was acting in ways that were completely abstract and just for better use of words, crazy. You know, there was just stuff happening and I was having to, like, look after her. The house wasn't getting clean. There was food. We didn't have food for like quite a few days really often. And it was just me and my brother keeping each other company. But it really brought my awareness to the front because I was making comparisons of other children's parents and looking at life. And my dad was amazing, but he only saw us on weekends and didn't know what was going on because we hid it from him. And he would take us away and he didn't have much money, but he would take us away in a little van that he built and take us to the beach or something and we'd just park up. So I had this real duality of experience from a really young age. But it also caused me to question life and become suicidal at a really young age where I was just like, I couldn't handle the stress and the pain. And I was brought up like Christian Catholic, I would say, because my nan was Irish. And when she passed, that just disappeared. No one really kept it up. But I used to pray. I'd be on my hands and my knees. I'd be praying, crying for some sort of savior, some sort of hope, something to change. And when I felt like I didn't get any answers, I questioned it. I was like, well, all these people that are praying in the church and they're praying all the time, like they're saying they're getting answers. Why am I not getting answers? What's wrong mm-hmm. with me? You mm-hmm. know? And that wasn't working. And then I started to look at them and just be like, oh, wait a minute, I don't think they're getting answers either. You know, and then I started looking at all the other religions, because like where I was from, there was Muslims, there's Hindus, there's a few different big races there and big religions. So I'd be watching their things and I was like, they're all doing the same thing. And I started questioning them all. And then like, I just like, this doesn't make any sense for me, you know? And then I was like, so there is no God, you know? So mm-hmm. I got into that state. There just can't be. This pain wouldn't exist. And like the answers would be answered. And I went through that for a long time. But I always said I'm 99% atheist. I could not give that 1% because I was like, who am I to know? I can't literally say 100%. So I was always 99%, which mm-hmm. I think left me open to be able to get a new sight later on. But mm-hmm. it took my life to get worse for faith to come back in. Yes. And it was like everything fell apart even worse when in 2015. And it was during that process where something, I was like, I have to fix something within. Because externally, life is just not working out for me. And it's been 27 years at this point in 2015, and it's never worked out for me. So I was like, do you know what? I'll find a way. I'm going to go within and find something in there with love and joy and go through, try something different. And then like a couple of years later, that process was changing me, how I felt. Mm-hmm. Chaos could happen externally and I wouldn't be affected in the same way. And my depression yes. lifted, all my pains were lifted. And I wasn't shaken by the world. And then it was like, then that faith of life itself, like something's happening for me here. This is all happening. And as I went more and more for that process, it was like, do you know what? Life's here so I can be of service. You know, I'm here to serve. Life, mm-hmm. living is giving. And going yes. through that, and I was like, I've got to give. That's all it's about. And what can I give other than my experiences? It's like, that's all my values there. And I was like, oh my God, my mom's my greatest gift I've ever had. She gave me unbelievable experiences. Mm-hmm. Because when I tell people about it, they've never experienced anything like it. I don't know. Maybe that's quite unique. You know, mm-hmm. speak to someone about the suicide and they've had an episode. And I was like, oh, I've had few of them episodes through my life. My mom's tried to commit suicide over 11 times. It's like, oh, I can really talk to you about this. I've had some experience. Right. And then suddenly mm-hmm. I see I can make a difference. I can mm-hmm. see that worth. And that value. And as I went through that process, I was like, oh my God, I've had a blessed life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was all the trauma. At one point, I thought I could never say that. You know, I thought that's just not a possibility. You know, it's just incredible. But that's where like I went from like semi-religious, but it was indoctrinated. It was just put into my face when I was a child and didn't stick.
Yes.
Then I sort of lost it for a long time. Mm-hmm. Loved all the atheist debates and stuff when I see people arguing about religion and stuff, and I'd like to I was binging them through my early 20s.
Yes.
And then I was like, oh, and then now to be in such a different place with it all, it's it's beautiful.
I have to tell you, I literally wrote somewhere in my book, it's not the title, but I wrote the day that I discovered that living is giving. Like I literally wrote that. And so it was about tithing. I think, you know, the mandate to give 10% to the church and the 10% belongs to God and those kinds of things. And I thought, I really realized while in China that living is giving. And it was more about, I needed to manage where I get the place from which I give because there are people on the receiving end of my giving if I am living.
Yeah.
So as long as I'm living and interacting with people, there are people on the receiving end. So I need to manage the place from which I give.
Oh, beautiful.
You know, that being full of love, if I want people to experience that and interact as they interact with me.
Yeah, and then beautiful. And again, I can relate to that. Like for me, I went through a big process of like self-love practices and trying to actually realize that I didn't know I didn't love myself. Through all this process, I've started to become this inner dictator to myself, you know, to fix the problems of the world, fix the problems in my life, but sort of forgetting like that inside there's something that needs to be loved there, you know, now, not later, not when you fix everything, pat yourself on your back. It's like, no, you need it now. I went through all this process and it was that realization that love's the attitude. For me, then my perspective, love's an attitude that you carry. Yeah. So you can give that attitude, or but the acts care. So like someone said to me, I do self-love, and they just explained all their self-care work. And to me, I was like, well, anyone can do that. You know, that's the act. You can have an animal, a dog, say, and someone could be feeding it, giving it shelter, but they have a horrible tone when they speak to it. They give it a bad attitude. They're caring for it. They're giving food and shelter. But where's the love? That sort of, to me, the love's the presence, the attitude. What state are you? How's your body language? How's your smile? You know, how do you feel when you're actually giving? Like you said, I love that you're sharing that in that way as well, because I can really relate to that.
And I love the way you're sharing with me, because you are helping me in other areas. I'm just applying that very thing right now of, you know, that the behavior of caring for someone, but the attitude is not, doesn't line up with. And so you can be cared for, you can be raised, if you will, but if the attitude of love is not there, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. And I've, like, through my mom's illness, I've been to at least, I don't even know the numbers, like 20, 30, 40 hospitals for the mentally ill, you know, where there's patients in there. And to be honest, most of the time, my mom was the worst one in there. And should be put in a special ward with the really special ones, where like they're on suicide watch. Some of them are locked down and padded up, and you see people with behavior that you just never see on the streets. And when I was in there, I'd watch the doctors and the nurses, and I noticed from a very young age there was like no love. Yeah, and a lot of people might disagree, but there was loads of care. They cared what they did, but for the most part, they were angry, they were bitter, they were frustrated. Like, they're seeing suffering all day long. And they're probably, I don't know, it's probably different if it's private hospitals, but this is government hospitals, so their pay is probably not that great. Yeah, it seems only the doctor gets good pay, and he doesn't actually turn up that much. You know, it was always be the nurses that I see. And there's the odd one, you see them go through ups and downs where they're so caring, they're trying to do their best, but they've just lost that love. They've lost the passion, you know, it's just get the job done. You know, I found that was like how I become to myself. I thought I was loving myself by sort of taking care, but I'm just telling myself, get the job done, you know, like a dictator on my back whipping me, get it done, get it done right, do it harder, do it faster. Come on, you can do better than this. Bang, bang. And it was like pushing yourself like that constantly and setting them expectations that one day, don't worry, one day this will be different. And then I was just living out there, you know, living so far in the future. That my present moment was just still suffering, still discomfort.
Wow.
And I'll tell you one thing that might give you something. It's a process that I've been trying to get across to people at the moment and putting more content is in the self-love world. There's more, I've seen more content arising, less from the male side. There's more on the female side. But for me, the biggest change that really changed for me was unconditional self-love. And once I got that, that's when consistency came. Because when I was just doing self-love and practicing, it was real ups and downs. It was like a roller coaster. Some days were amazing. I felt great about myself. My attitude was great. Later that day, I could feel terrible and I'd be back to my old habits and looking grumpy. And my partner said to me, she's like, you okay? And I'd get angry. I'd be like, why are you telling me I'm okay? I'm fine. And then I realized, well, why do I react like that? I can't be fine. You know, why am I tense again? Because you look like you're miserable. If I was to take a picture, you look miserable. Yeah, and at the time, you don't want to hear that because you're trying to do good still. And you're like,
oh. Right, right.
And you look back. And then when I was unconditional, I was like, I have to lose all the expectations in myself. Still full of ambition. I can have all the dreams, desires, and ambition in the world. But I don't have to wait for them to actually fruit, to feel good, to love myself, to enjoy the moment. I was like, there's no conditions set on myself. There's no conditions. The conditions have to be met if there's an expectation. If there's no expectation, there's no conditions. And without that, then there's no judgment. And all the judgment disappeared. I couldn't judge myself on my acts. I was like, I know what kindness is. I know what love is. And I know what compassion is. So why do I need to judge? You know, act in that. Not have to keep judging yourself. And then I like just lost all judgment for everything. That's the best way I can explain it. It's just like, that gave me the consistency in my attitude.
Yes. The attitude to love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really curious because I'm trying to write a book at the moment. I have so many book titles written down and ideas, and I'm trying to formulate on just one at the moment and just get that done. But I was looking at, like, I've interviewed people that have published and people that are self-published. And you said you got yours published. How did you go about actually getting it published?
Well, I knew someone who had published a book already. They'd signed a book deal with a publishing company. And so she just recommended my book. And it spoke loud enough to the publishing company. And they said, listen, let's talk. Simply. I had been told no by some other companies. And I just continued to pursue opportunities that were being presented to me. And by that, I mean, you know, there were a little glimpse of light that might be, maybe that pub company would like to talk to me, or maybe that, and this one did, and it has been perfect. So I'm grateful for the no's. This publishing company, one of the biggest things I appreciate about the company is that they have been so approachable, because I've not always had applause to offer in specific circumstances. You know what I mean? And so there have been times I felt like I needed to speak up about something that was unpleasant, and they were approachable. Oh, nice. And so there's an overall applause for being approachable that I appreciate about this particular publishing company.
Oh, nice. And how much content did you have to send them at the beginning? Was it like the first three chapters, or did you have your whole book ready?
I had the whole book ready, but I had also had it copywritten.
Okay. So you gave them the whole lot. They checked it through and just got back to you.
Yes.
And how long did it take, say, from that, from them saying, taking you on board, to you being doing your first book signing?
I think I got a contract in, this is 2020 in December. I received a contract. I didn't sign it until March the next year.
What was the delay on the signing it?
Really taking my time to go through it. I have a mentor, and one of my friends, her husband is an attorney. And so it really was taking our time to go through every paragraph. My mentor went through it with me, and we wrote down the questions we have about certain parts of the contract. And then we delivered those questions and the contract to my friend, who was an attorney, and he went through it with me. And it was just a back and forth until we had peace.
Was there much negotiation or amendments needed in the contract?
I think, you know, much is relative. Was there some negotiation and amendments? Yes, absolutely.
Would you recommend, even if you're happy with it, that you should do that process anyway? Or is it just because you saw things that needed to be?
As far as, what do you mean?
For the contract, like someone would say, when you never to accept, say, your first deal, and they said there's always room for negotiation. Like, so someone would always want to negotiate, even if they read it and go, no, I'm happy to sign it, this is great. Sometimes a professional might come along and say, you know, you actually look stronger, or you look, it's better to negotiate a little bit. It's actually more professional. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I'm asking.
Right. And I don't know if it's true either. I didn't negotiate because I wanted to look stronger. I negotiated because the attorney said to me, you deserve better than this. Okay. And so, what do I ask for? You know, well, let's ask for shared equity. Oh, okay. You know, I didn't know, you know, so that I think my biggest recommendation is that you seek legal help or someone smarter than you. You know, biggest thing for creatives is always surround yourself with people who are smarter than you, who have more life experience. My mentor is a CEO of a government agency. So she's not there for no reason, and she probably will retire from that place. She's been doing it a long time. So she's had to have conversations about legalities. And then my attorney friend was a blessing to me and helped us go through it as well. And when I actually got a better agreement than what the attorney told me to ask for.
Oh, no.
So yeah, but I think most important to me is the relationship I have with the publisher. I really have pushed for a relationship. Matter of fact, there was a post made this past Saturday. I was called a friend by the publisher, the president. And I really have worked towards that. I'm not sure about anybody else, but relationship matters more to me. And so when we were going through our discussions, I would always push for video call. I wanted to create that friendship, that relationship, that sense of respect and camaraderie. It's a partnership, you know, so let's really be partners. And so to see that, you know, that we've gotten to that place that we can call each other friends, that matters to me a lot.
Oh, yeah, nice. No, I like it. And the last 2 years have obviously been affected everyone in some way. How has that helped? Did that actually help you with your book?
It did. Thank you for asking. It just gave me more time to finish, you know, gave me more time to write, more time to think, just a lot more time to devote to actually getting the book done. But as we have all gone back to work, now I feel like I'm working two jobs. So and no complaints. I'm very grateful. I'm telling you, the book is just a small part of this process. The people I have met, you know, this is a dream come true to meet people of all different kinds and different beliefs. I hugged a guy Saturday. I hugged him 3 times. He had on a kilt, a whole full body Scottish outfit. And just because he was uniquely different, just like I was standing there uniquely announcing something apart from a majority, we connected so fast, so quickly, you know? And so I'm just learning. I'm figuring out that this book has only unlocked the door for me to do what I've dreamed of doing, connect with people across the world with all kinds of different beliefs and ideas and show and respect people where or how they have announced themselves in the world, despite the difference, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, I was in Christianity. I was raised to offer salvation. My job was to convert you, to make you a Christian. And I didn't feel like I could love authentically doing that. And it was more important to me. I feel like God gave me the mandate to love him and love people. And I couldn't do that. I couldn't love people and have the agenda of making sure they're Christians. To me, that's not authentic. And so to love with an agenda to me is not love at all. And so I had to give up Christianity to do that.
Yeah, it's like, it reminds me back what I was saying earlier about the condition, like unconditional love.
Right.
But if you've got conditioned love, you know, who really wants that? You know, that's an abusive relationship.
Right. It's right.
Like, you act like this, you behave like this, you do this. Yeah, you can have some love.
Right.
Whatever form that is. But no, it's so interesting. Where can people find this book? Where's the best place for people to go to reach out to you online? And if they just wanted to grab a copy of the book?
So, Lord, I Don't Want to Die a Christian, my journal and journey to freedom can be found at Amazon.com. Barnes and Noble, Books a Million. If you want to support Black businesses, Black Mecca, what's it called? Book Mecca. and a plethora of other places that I'm not familiar with. Go online, Google it. I have a website, Chandrika D, as in dog, fee, or I should say Chandrika D as in Diane. How about I just use my middle name? D as in Diane, fee, .com. And if you click on the image of the book, it'll take you to Amazon to buy, where you can purchase the book. I am on Instagram as Chandrika D. Fee. I am on LinkedIn, Facebook as the same. If you want to reach out to me, but let me know how you heard about me. I have a lot of people in my inbox. I have no idea who they are. And so I'm very reluctant to respond. So reach out, tell me how you heard about me, and I'll make sure to respond.
Nice. And I'll make sure I put it all in the description so people could just click and go straight through. Yes. It sounds fascinating. I think we're near the end of the show. I have just a few small, fun questions I ask every guest at the end. Do you have time for them?
I do.
Yeah. Okay. If you could only choose one, a cat or a dog?
Dog.
What's your favorite color?
I don't have one.
So, would it be all colors then?
I guess so. I don't have a lot of favorites. I'll tell you what shows up in my decor. Multi though, like red, orange, green, they show up in my home decor a lot.
Okay. What sound or noise do you love?
Oh gosh, do I have to choose one? The sound of the wind, the sound of moving water. Oh God, that one is just,
yeah, water. That sound of water is amazing.
The sound of water is one thing, but the sound of moving water is another. And you know, a creek or a river, a waterfall, I say it is a reflection of my heart. It is, if you put a stethoscope to my chest, this is how it sounds. So I love the sound of moving water for sure, or the wind in my ears. I'm a cyclist, so I love to ride with no headphones. When I go running, I don't put headphones in my ear. I love the sound of nature, the birds, the bugs. I love all that.
Oh, nice. And it was actually one of my previous guests that hasn't gone up yet. She was talking about her friend who was born deaf. And then we was talking about a waterfall and perceptions. And it just came to me. I was like, I want to know how that person feels seeing a waterfall, because such a big part of me, it's the sound it makes. You know, right. You're going to feel the vibration. But if you've never heard sound, you're seeing this big picture. You're seeing all this water just hitting the ground and splashing and the motion. But I was just so cute. I said, you got to take her to the waterfall and ask her, what's that feel like?
Curious. I have actually, one of my biggest goals or dreams was simply to sit in a waterfall or to sit under it. And I have some photos on social media of me doing that. And it was just the most exhilarating. I was so high. I mean, inebriated. From sitting in a waterfall. It was amazing. I mean, just amazing is the best I can do. It was amazing.
Yeah, no, beautiful. What sound or noise do you not like so much?
I don't like the sound of styrofoam. You know, when someone's moving around, I don't like that. Of course, the scratching of the chalkboard. That stuff is just, the sound of a bone breaking or something.
Yeah, that would be not nice.
Right. Yeah. Those things just kind of go through me. And I've kind of associated that with being empathic, you know, where you can feel just about everything emotionally or physically.
Yeah. What excites you? What motivates you? What gets you really energized?
These conversations.
Nice. And what do you love about yourself?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. What I love about myself, I love being boldly authentic. Nice. I love that. I think I'm not settled on this, but I think I came to this world naturally joyous. And I'm still working to see if that's true. But The older I get, I'm not finding where my joy can be interrupted.
What do you mean by that? Like you just feel full of joy and it's nothing shakes it, or?
Yeah, that's how I'm, but I'm not sure. I'm still working on being sure that is true. But there have been times where you would think that it should be interrupted and it's not.
It's interesting because my life's been like the opposite. I feel everyone innately is born full of unconditional love and joy. Mm-hmm. And it takes events in life to sort of either corrupt it or break it. But it was there from the very, very beginning.
And that's how I feel too.
And then for me, it felt like, yeah, that was corrupted and broken. And I had to sort of regain that, re-get in touch with that, re-feel it and actually get to know it. And what I'd say is understand it instead of understand it. And when I went through that process, it was like, okay, I can feel joy. And then I went through a process, like some crazy stuff was happening in my life. My love, Danielle, she's nearly dead. And I was told she was going to die. And there was moments where I still was able to get myself back to joy. And then I started questioning, am I allowed to be joyful right now? You know, but then I'm telling myself, no, but I'm doing everything possible for this person and for myself. And this is like, it's like I'm going through that faith period at this time as well. Of like, is life happening for me or to me? Because it looks like it's not very good. So it's like, is this happening for me? And I've had to keep telling myself, you don't know how it's happening for you. You're not all that yet. You know, you just got to be open. Look for the opportunity. And maybe it will come in a year. Maybe it'll be 10 years. Maybe it'll be 20 years. But that opportunity, you could always use your memory, imagination, and go back and find it. And noticing that, but I did notice, like when I was getting that more consistent joy, that I was questioning it, like because it was like it's almost taboo. And then when I say to people, I was like, I'm not happy all the time. Happiness is meant to be an emotion that's up and down. You know, that's not consistent. You know, it wouldn't be any fun if you was overly happy all the time. But joy seems to be consistent. Joy is like that attitude. It's like I describe it as like magnetism. It's radiant. It's consistent. Magnet never loses its radiance. And happiness is like electric. It's like a wave. You know, it has ups and downs. Mm-hmm. So if you're in the pursuit of only happiness, you're always going to have ups and downs, and you're always going to have disappointments because you can't maintain it. But joyfulness is different, and I do think joyfulness is something that can be consistent. You know, so I think it is. If you're questioning it, I think it's something that's like, don't need to question it. Man. Just be joyful.
When it's supposed to be shaken, it's not. I don't know. I just, you know,
it's that perception of opportunity. That perception of holding that opportunity, like you said, I think that's like one of the biggest keys. If you can hold that and see that, and like you answered when I said obstacle, you're like, nah, there's no obstacles. Yours instant.
It's opportunity. Yeah.
But that's a joyful attitude.
Yeah, okay.
And someone go, you ain't suffered enough.
And <they're> like, no. Right. You haven't gone through enough.
It's like another thing I heard recently, and it's sort of relevant. Someone said, like, money doesn't buy happiness. And I was like, and then I heard someone go, yeah, that's because you haven't given away enough of it. You know, it's like, it's sometimes the most joyful people have suffered the most or have suffered. You know, it's not someone who's in suffering or in pain or in a bad mood. You know, they just want to bring other people to that place. They just don't want to be lonely. They see you enjoy, and it's like they want it. You know, it's contagious. They want that joy, and they're like, "Well, if I can't, they can't give joy because they're not in that place. But what I can give you is try and bring you to my place. Come here to pain, you know." And it's like,
since I can't come to your joy, come here to pain.
Yeah, and I think that's it. So you don't hold their issues; you just let them have it. If that's what they want, I give you joy. I got no conditions on you. If you want to hold your pain, hold it. If you want to hold your suffering, hold it. It's not my place.
Oh, this is so good. I mean, I'm just reflecting on the conversation that I had Saturday, and it was like, hey, I don't care if that's what brings you peace, you know, to separate yourself from me on social media. Do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I love you. You know what I mean? Like my joy couldn't be shaken that day. I was so aware of my fullness, you know, my awareness of how full I am was just, it was out the roof, and you couldn't bring me down from that.
Beautiful. That's perfect. That's great. Yeah. What do you love to see in other people?
Authenticity.
Nice. And last question, what do you love about animals? This could be animals in the wild, pets, whatever you want to perceive animals as.
themselves. You know, I was talking to someone the other day about how unnatural it would be for a mother bird to take back in a bird she kicked out of the nest. You know, the bird has lived 30 years and wants to come home. And how unnatural that is. I think, you know, animals have a way of teaching us, you know, how the world can be. But sometimes, you know, sometimes also in a violent way as well. You know, it's very difficult. I'm, you know, still trying to figure out why an alligator would eat an alligator. But at the same time, I've watched, dogs take care of bunnies. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so the nature and animals and things like that just can teach us often how the world can be.
Yeah, no, beautiful. Well, is there any last things that you wanted to share or we haven't covered before we close?
I'm great. I'm glad that I was able to be here. And I told you, thank you so much for coming back around. You just never know. You just never know. This was wonderful.
Well, thank you. And I truly do appreciate your authenticity and openness and sharing. And I wish you all the best with your future endeavors. And yeah, it's been great to chat to you. I've really enjoyed it. And I was actually looking in the future to do short little, because I was saying, I don't know how well this will come across as a video, but it will be audio podcast. But in the future, I was thinking I might just do like 10 minute video, not podcast so much, but pick a topic and just have a conversation for 10 minutes with people on that. So I'd love to have you back in the future, just talking about faith without religion.
I love the idea. And I might have to steal that faithism from you. Faithism. Yeah. Like, wow, you do need to coin that. But I'm going to say my friend, as my friend Daniel would say, Luke, faithism.
Yeah. But yeah, no, faithism and faith fitness. You know, that's a, because like you said, them words, I've used that word with someone else the other day, and they're not of any religion. They do believe that the world's happening for them, but they just could not get to a point with me where they would use that word. That word was so taboo to them.
Yeah.
That's it. And they're like, you need to give me a new word. They said, I just can't stand that word. And they just wouldn't. So that's just like,
wow.
That's like, no, we just need to take the word back.
Right. Let's take it back. Let's take it back. I'm going to get it back. So yeah, I love it. This is so good. Great way to start the morning.
Well, it's been a lovely afternoon for me. So have a beautiful rest of your day. And yes, I'll follow up with you in the future.
Yes, sir. Thank you so
great
much.
Great to chat you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
See you later. Thank you so much for being here and listening to The Selfish Podcast. I'm your host, Luke Greenhart, and I appreciate you being here. Don't forget to check out my YouTube channel. Just search Luke Greenhart on YouTube. You'll find me. Check out my website, lukegreenhart.com. Have an amazing day and stay tuned for more episodes. I'll be interviewing guests on their path of self-development, their path to self, getting to know them in much more intimacy, much more depth, sharing and connecting with all so we can have a much more blissful, joyful and productive life together. All right, much love. Have a great day.